Hello and welcome to The Soprano Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Today we will be discussing Season 5, Episode 4 of The Sopranos, titled All Happy Families. This episode aired March 28th, 2004. It was written by Tony Kalem, who played...
Plays Angie Bronfencero.
Plays, right? Yes. Yeah. That's not our like Angie. She's dead or anything in the show.
Right.
Yeah. That's our Angie. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it was directed by Rodrigo Garcia, his first and only. So here is the HBO synopsis for this episode. Carmela and Tony reunite, if only to discuss Anthony Jr.'s dwindling college prospects. Feach takes Tony's crew on a trip down memory lane. Lorraine's allegiances get her in hot water. And AJ has a night to remember in the Big Apple. This is another good one. I think season five so far is like one after the other, four episodes in, still just rolling.
Yeah, I have long considered season five to be my favorite season. I think I'll see why now.
Yeah, I can see why. Well, we open the scene with AJ driving up and down the driveway.
Right.
In what has to be such an act of boredom. Like the biggest act of boredom.
Yeah, it's like, what possible enjoyment are you getting out of that?
Right.
Driving up and reversing down a hill when you're like...
It's good practice.
15 or 16 or however old. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also have Tony B over at the house with his twins.
Right.
Okay, so he has twin boys that are fairly old. And we actually noticed too, or at least I noticed, that AJ seems noticeably older. Like just a little bit older as he's driving, and especially in this entire episode, he's definitely seems like he's just grown up just a little bit more.
That's interesting. Well, you and Carmela are on the same page for this episode, because I think that's a reflection that she's having quite a bit throughout.
I would say so. Yeah. We get this lingering shot of Tony B kind of looking at the property.
Right.
Probably thinking, this is what he could have had.
Exactly. And I gotta say, when we first started talking about doing this podcast,
mm-hmm.
I remember thinking about when we would get to this season
and
what I would say about Steve Buscemi as Tony B, because for a long time, I kind of felt like I actually didn't like this performance and I didn't really like this character.
Oh.
And the thing about it was that this is always the danger when you cast someone, right? That's like extremely recognizable and already has a fairly well-established, not fairly, very well-established career.
Yeah.
By the time they come to like a show that you love as, you know, a new character.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really think of them as anything but like the star that they are. So I think like the other example would be Joe Pantoliano, but you know, we all perfectly accept him as Ralph Cifaretto.
Yeah.
And with this, I always just felt like, does Steve Buscemi really feel like a guy that grew up with these guys?
Mm.
And I never quite bought it.
Okay.
However,
yeah,
I'm kind of changing my mind.
Would it be the belly tattoo that he has?
It might be that. It might be that. I know. I mean, honestly, I sort of like the subtlety of this character.
Yeah.
And the fact that Tony B, he is a little enigmatic in a way. And, you know, of course, his character will develop as the season progresses. But with that look, you know, at the pool, checking out the house, you just get that sense that there's a lot going on inside of him that he's maybe not really going to voice.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't sure if he should voice, even to himself. But there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I'm kind of looking at Tony B differently than I did before. And so now I'm happy with this character in a way that I wasn't before.
Well, that's good. I'm sure everyone is delighted to know that you appreciate Steve Buscemi.
You know what?
In this
Hannibal
season.
Diaz approves of Tony B and Steve Buscemi. Yeah, I agree. That is the most important thing that we all could have learned.
Well, we do learn a lot, don't we? We learn that his sperm was smuggled out of prison with the help of Tony Soprano. Not that he helped, you know, get the sperm,
right,
but transferred the sperm
and
donated it to Nancy, Tony B's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the least he could do.
It's the least. And we get Tony in a moment here. He begins to complain about the power drill missing, and that he loaned to Brian. Of course, we remember it was just an excuse.
That's right.
Lie.
Yeah.
That he gave that to Brian. And he maybe has a little attack here. He calls it indigestion, but I've never had indigestion that makes me almost pass out.
Right. Yeah. I haven't either. But it's a moment.
Yeah. He also says here that he had an attack recently. He says he's had a full-blown attack, and that prompts Carmela to ask him if he's been seeing Melfi.
Right.
I can't recall.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, because he definitely hasn't had a full-blown attack in a while.
Yeah.
Unless we're, like, just horribly missing something.
No. I don't recall. Somebody will pick up on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I watched this episode twice, and he says, I had one recently.
Oh.
So I don't know what he's referring to.
Yeah, I guess it was an off-screen one.
Maybe. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe he's lying. Maybe he's just saying that for sympathy. Who knows? But it leads them into their discussion about AJ needing to see, them needing to meet with Mr. Wegler.
Yeah.
Who gave AJ the Billy Budd assignment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Mr. Wegler. And so this is great because, you know, as we talked about, Carmela wasn't in the previous episode at all.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, she plays a very, very significant role.
Yep.
And it's good to, like, kind of contrive this situation where Tony and Carmela have to spend time together, even though they hate each other pretty much at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony misses no opportunity to say that he is annoyed that the separation is happening. Literally every time we see them together, he tries to voice that in some way, that he wants it to be over and he wants to come back. He wants the family to be whole again.
Yeah. And then we move on to what HBO described as Lorraine's hot water that she's in.
Oh, God. She steps out of hot water, literally, into the truly hot water.
Yeah. Yeah. So I felt like, you know, so much for that character.
Right.
And it really felt like this episode, it was a precursor for future Game of Thrones episodes that decided to show you a great character. And then in the next minute, they're gone.
Yeah.
And this episode does it twice. Once with Lorraine, who you're like, ooh, we get to see a woman who's playing a significant... Nope.
Not so much.
Nope. She was warned once. Guess she was still kicking up to little Carmine. Phil Leotardo's like, I will be your executioner.
Yeah, I mean, why did she think that she could get away with it?
I really don't know.
I mean, that mock execution was pretty fucking serious.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we get this pretty disturbing scene.
Kind of, right? I mean, it is one of those Soprano scenes where it's played for laughs in a very unsettling way.
Yeah, I mean, she basically is chased through her house naked. And then, you know, she has nowhere to go. It really is kind of the worst kind of situation. The one person who maybe could defend her boyfriend, dead already.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, she was reminded that she was warned. And then she is executed, you know, on her floor downstairs.
Yeah.
Nice and neat.
Yeah. Nice and neat.
And then, of course, we've got Phil Leotardo waiting outside.
Exactly.
And then they drive off.
Executioner just waiting.
Yeah. So then little Carmine gets the news that Lorraine has just been taken out. Angelo and Rusty are there. Frankie Valli. Yeah.
Holy crap.
So he's in there. Okay, great.
Rusty Malio.
Yeah. And basically they're all devastated. This is really taking things to a whole new level.
Yeah.
And you know, little Carmine in particular seems to be extremely grief-stricken.
Yeah, a little bit disturbed by this.
Yeah.
You know, it was all fun and games.
Right.
Now it's getting very serious.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then Frankie Valli, aka Rusty, advocates for all-out war against Johnny Sack.
Yeah.
But Angelo, who is the consigliere, cautions against it.
Yeah, well, rightly so. I think Rusty's a little... it's got some loose nuts in his head or something.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that group of like little Carmine and two old guys,
right,
and compare that with like the psychotic Phil Leotardo and Johnny Sack.
Well, that's what I'm pretty sure little Carmine's thinking. Like he thinks it was all just Phil.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Johnny Sack is no slouch in the psycho department. I mean, we've seen him piss on a guy after beating the shit out of him.
That's true.
Johnny Sack is not to be messed with. So
nope.
Yeah, this war is definitely getting, the stakes are raised.
Yes. And then the guys in New Jersey hear about it as they are all settled in at Crazy Horse. Feech enters, and Feech right up from the top begins with the "in my day" line.
Yes.
And Adriana enters to hand some drinks out. Feech makes a slightly offhanded remark about her attractiveness in, you know, not an outright like disgusting way in front of Christopher, but in a way that gives Christopher a moment to just fucking stare him down.
Yeah, exactly.
Give those imperially dead eyes, like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like, you better turn this respectful old man real quick. And right. Then that's when Feech says, "my compliments."
Yeah, Feech corrects him, you know, self, catches himself there, and then begins into these old-time stories about, you know, another guy, old-timers, Gumar, this and that. Tony recognizes a story is at play, and then Syl remembers a very specific story that involves Feech.
Right, yeah. This is the story that really introduced Feech Lamano. We first heard about it in season 3 from Ralph, right?
Yep.
And this was how Tony basically made his bones, you know? He teamed up with Jackie April, mm-hmm. and they robbed Feech Lamano's card game.
Mm-hmm.
Came away with like 20 grand or something. Yeah.
Very specifically, Feech is calling out Tony here as being a coward during it.
Right.
And that's when Tony shuts down the rest of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because he says that, like, Tony was scared. Who knows if he was really scared, I mean, or if it's just ball breaking. But, you know.
Well, there is a lot of ball breaking that can be misinterpreted as not ball breaking.
Yeah.
Or interpreted correctly as not ball breaking.
And I guess it depends on who you're directing it at,
too.
Right.
Sure.
And so I think it's a bit of that thing again that, you know, we saw Tony B get in trouble with this before, right? A couple episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be careful when you're breaking the boss's balls.
No, absolutely. The younger guys leave, and Feech asks Tony if he can get the executive game back.
Cool that we get a return of the executive game.
We do, in a big way.
Yeah.
Very big way. And I really like the line, speaking of back in the day, you know, when, you know, Feech is laying out his reasons why he should get the game back.
11 years I ran it. No fights, no raids. Not to mention that maybe I got it coming, considering how it could have gone for you after you took the game down, if I had been a prick about it.
Or if his old man didn't have so many friends.
Which is a key line in many ways. The idea that Tony's dad has friends. And the fact that Tony did get away with it because his dad has friends.
Right.
You know, Feech couldn't do anything because his dad's Johnny Soprano.
Right.
And we know who Johnny Soprano was. Big tough guy.
Yeah. And of course, too, I thought about Jackie Jr., right? Mm-hmm. Because hearing this story, right, in season 3 is what prompted him to do his robbery, which wound up being horribly botched and mm-hmm. led to his death. But he was thinking along exactly the same lines where he was like, you know, if we get in and get out, even though we robbed all these important guys, because of my ties to Tony and because my dad used to be the boss, I'll get away with it just like Tony got away with it.
Yeah.
But obviously it didn't work out for Jackie Jr.
No, it's like a remake of a movie.
Right.
Normally it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And you lose a lot of money.
Yeah, Jackie Jr., just the shitty heist remake.
Yeah, exactly.
That cost him his life.
Yeah. Well, then that scene does end just with Syl having some words about Feech and Tony kind of defending him just a little bit.
Yeah, that's a nice line. He's old. How do you think that feels?
Cut to Carmelo looking at possible Botox.
Right.
So this is a nice transition there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's again, this is the major plot for Carmela is her constant positioning of, or she's being constantly put in the position of bad cop,
right?
Of playing the lawmaker, setting the rules for AJ. Yeah, well, he has to try to convince her if he can go spend the night and the whole day in the city.
Right.
Come home the next day.
Right, right. Yeah, so Carmela shoots it down. No mud vein for you, young man.
Yeah.
And, you know, staying, you know, in spending the night in the city, being a teenager, she obviously knows what could happen, what trouble he might get into. And AJ sulks away.
Yeah. But then we get the executive game. We waste no time here. And it's a big game. Bigger than we saw in season two. A lot of players at the table here. Oh, even yeah. Hesh is here.
Yeah. We get a huge, like, parade of cameos, actually.
Yeah.
In this scene. The linebacker, Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
Is in this scene, which is cool. And then this guy, Bernie Brillstein, who gets his balls broken by Tony for looking like Santa Claus. And in real life, this guy, Bernie, was a producer, and he worked with Brad Grey, who kind of helped bring The Sopranos to HBO and get it set up.
Oh, wow.
So that's his connection to things.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yeah, but this is a great scene.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And we got tension. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we got Syl.
Right.
Back in the game, already grumpy, already displeased with his hands.
Yep.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that the tension between Tony and Feech kind of becomes even more evident.
Absolutely. Well, you know, yeah, Feech is in one of his stories.
Yeah.
And don't you just hate it when your story gets interrupted when somebody, you know, comes over and you're like, oh, crap. Do I really have to tell this all over again?
Right.
And that's kind of the position. It was written very nicely where it really puts Feech in that awkward position of like, I'm right at the punchline.
Mm-hmm. It is his game after all, too.
It is his game. But the boss comes in,
right.
And this is where we do get, like, the, is Feech breaking Tony's balls a little bit here, you know, with...
So how's Lady Luck treating you, huh?
Jesus fucking Christ, how many times this guy got to say hello?
What, did I interrupt one of your impermeable stories? Go ahead.
So, we had these girls in the hotel room. Long story short, I got my shoe in a snatch.
And it falls off and she keels over. Que boots.
Exactly. Tony's definitely miffed by that kind of comment, that less than respectful comment from Feech.
Yeah, I mean, Tony says, no, 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 continue with your story only so I can interrupt it.
Right.
And ruin it.
Right.
And that's exactly what he does.
Yeah. And it's great.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Feech is clearly annoyed by this, as he should be. But then we get a kind of key bit of setup, which we may not recognize as such at the moment.
Right.
Is this the Prick Doctor?
Yeah, but a different actor.
Oh, a different actor as the Prick Doctor.
Yeah.
As the penile implant doctor, Ira Freed.
Yeah.
So here he is talking about upcoming daughter's wedding.
Yep.
And there's going to be a lot of money there, a lot of, you know, people that are rich. The thing is going to be very expensive. And it's just kind of offhand chat, but that no one really cares about at all, except for Feech LaManna.
That's right.
He is noticing.
Yeah. The only other thing I'd say about this scene, it's nice to see Vito's at the table, literally.
Right? Yeah.
You know, he's literally he's worked his way up since... Every capo that he has worked for has died.
Yeah, right. That's a good point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. For the super nerds out there.
Oh.
He is kind of like the Laura Roslin of The Sopranos.
I don't
know. Laura
even...
Roslin is a character on Battlestar Galactica.
Wow.
Like I said, for the super nerds.
Did we get any of... Did anyone out there... Did Hannibal reach anyone just now with that reference?
I have to believe I got one. Okay. I got at least one person.
Let us know if Hannibal got you there.
Please do.
Yeah. Well, okay. We go into our next scene. The parent-teacher meeting here with Mr. Wegler. Love the start of this where we hear Wegler talking to another family, and he goes into about this kid's blues folkloric studies in Mississippi.
Straight A's at Middlebury's language camp, can't sneeze at that. And your blues folkloric studies in Mississippi last summer have an almost community service spin to them.
I just wish he had the minority thing going for him.
The minority thing going for him.
I feel like that's just pure David Chase.
Right.
Like, just so cynical.
Yeah.
About the whole, like, college application process. I mean, we saw a lot of similar type jokes.
Yes.
When we were going through the whole Meadow trying to get into college plot.
Yeah.
So this is clearly something that, like, David Chase thinks is hilarious.
Yeah.
And is cynical about, and he just puts that in the show.
Absolutely.
Whenever he can.
Of course. Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah.
Mr. Wegler is played by David Strathairn. He's actually an Emmy winner. He's an Oscar-nominated actor. Very good actor.
I've seen this guy in a million things.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
He's fantastic. They bring him in. He brings Carmela and Tony and AJ in. And it's just very funny how AJ immediately hops on the ADD thing, as he might have a learning disability, so he'll get unlimited time when taking his SATs.
I would too. I literally laughed because I literally tried this.
No.
When I was in high school.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, no, I did. I said to my mom, like, you know, I think I might be ADD. And she was like,
did you get it from this show?
No, I hadn't seen this yet.
Oh, wow.
So I was actually ahead of AJ.
Wow.
With this. Suffice to say, it did not work. My mom was like, I think she literally said what Carmela says later in this episode, which is, you're just lazy. So there you go.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wegler suggests a psychologist for AJ to see, and this obviously tickles Tony a bit, who says it's just a crutch. Love the quote.
People use it as a crutch. And I always wonder what happened to Gary Cooper, the strong, silent type.
Well, Gary Cooper wasn't a 16-year-old boy.
He was at one time.
Right.
It's just like, oh, you got him, Tony.
Yeah.
You got him there.
Right.
And then, so Carmela sides with Tony. They walk out. AJ has not gone back to class, and he is telling a friend that he might be learning disabled.
Right.
And they're like, awesome, dude.
Yeah, nice. Exactly.
Like, if you came to school and told me, hey, I might be learning disabled, I wouldn't be like, all right, man.
Right, yeah.
High five.
Yeah. But no, these knuckleheads, it's good news. But what is not good news, and at first we have no idea why this is included in the scene whatsoever, but there is kind of like a distraught, like, school secretary there who shares the news that two of AJ's classmates were involved in a horrible car accident.
Mm-hmm.
One of the girls died. The other girl is in a coma.
Yep. So if psychology is mentioned, though, in one scene, we have to assume Melfi will appear in another. And the very next one, she greets one of her other clients. Next to him is this large basket of soaps. And she obviously knows who it's from.
Right. And I like this too. You know, so we had this big callback to season, multiple callbacks to season two, actually, in this episode, right?
I know what you're going to say, yeah.
Executive game.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the client who is waiting is Terrence Winter.
Terrence Winter, yeah.
And we saw him before. Terrence Winter, the writer, of course, of the show. One of the writers, of course. And he had an appearance in season two as one of Melfi's clients. So this is a recurring character.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah.
Levels. There's levels to this show.
Right.
Gotta pay attention, guys. At the start of this next scene with AJ and the tutor, I do have to say, this tutor asking about a Google of zeros on a piece of paper is the stupidest fucking thing.
Yeah.
That you, it's just a stupid question. If that's on an SAT, I'm sorry. What are we learning here?
I mean, I have to believe that they took this from a real SAT question. I mean, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It was stupid. My mind was numb.
You're right.
Just overhearing it.
Yeah. But how truly indulgent of Tony.
Yeah, this is great.
To give a car to his undeserving son.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I mean, Tony's logic is the other kids died because right. they weren't in a safe car. So I'll get my kid a really expensive, safe car.
Yeah, this, like, ridiculous yellow SUV.
Yeah.
And it AJ just completely blows off tutoring to go sit in it with Tony. Yeah. Carmella comes out that great detail of, like, the tutor being like, hey, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Fucking idiot. And, yeah, while they're in there, we get a lot of this kind of, like, AJ very much on Tony's side. Obviously, he just got this huge, ridiculous gift from Tony. Mm-hmm. But also, AJ, you know, takes every opportunity he can to just slam Carmella.
Oh, shit all over her.
Yeah.
Seriously. Snappy.
Very snappy.
He even yeah. has a moment, though, doesn't he, of doubt about this car.
Right.
Because of how much it's going to damage the ozone.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of a funny little bit there. Yeah. But yeah, Tony's not 100% indulgent. He says you can't drive this in your day-to-day until you pull your grades up to C's.
I mean, that is the easiest shit to do. Pull your grades up to C. And you
pull
can,
it up to a C.
Yeah, yeah, pull it up to a C. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And you can drive this car. That's not hard.
Right.
That is not hard.
I mean, unless he's kind of like learning disabled, like pulling your grades up to C's, like all you need is like minimal effort. I'm not saying no effort.
Right.
I'm just saying minimal effort.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's good enough for Arizona State, though, is right. what I'm, you know, I think it's just all around nuts. Anyway, we transition back into the house. Carmella is very upset with the way AJ is talking to her, and she doesn't seem like, you know, she thinks Tony is not really on her side for this whole thing. And we get this very key argument from Carmella about Tony himself not having any real friends,
right?
Which, you know, I mentioned before how Syl mentioned that Johnny Soprano had very good friends. Well, Tony, you know, must think he has very good friends as well.
Of course, he's got this huge crew.
Right, right. But Carmella lays it out for him. They only laugh at your jokes. They only like you because they're afraid of you.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, you are their boss. Like,
yeah.
As she literally says, they have to kiss your ass. Yeah. That's part of it.
No one likes their boss.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Tony accuses her of being a cynic.
Oh, yeah.
And is very dismissive.
Yeah. But what a wonderful scene we have next. I love this moment between Melfi and Kupferberg.
Right.
Oh, God. What a, just a hilarious moment. Melfi reading Tony's letter out loud with all of his mistakes.
Yes.
Foul with a W, repeating regards.
Yeah.
It's just...
Spelling... misspelling regards, like rigged, she says. So you have yeah. to assume he spelled it R-I-G, like A-R-D.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, I have some great rigged for you. Just the way she is trying to read it as clear as possible is so good. But yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, I love that Kupferberg is associating the soaps that he gave her with his means of trying to cleanse himself. But, you know, what is Melfi to do at this point? Because right. it's like repeating a pattern here.
Yeah. She's exasperated.
Yeah.
You know, she feels like, yeah, okay, he apologized. I'm sure he means it. I'm sure if I see him again, he'll be perfectly nice. But here we go again.
Yeah. But she does say he's still blaming me for it.
Right. Right.
Apology aside.
Yeah.
I'm still the one to blame.
Of course.
Yeah.
So in our next scene, Wegler calls Carmella.
Yeah.
And says that he'd like to meet one-on-one.
To talk about AJ.
Yeah. Interesting scene. Because I think any person knows, you know, even if you don't know where this episode's going, you're like, eh, that's not really why he's calling.
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
How could he?
Yeah. And then we next get to Carmella and AJ. My second favorite line of the episode, I gotta say, is in this scene. I just I love how she's making this effort,
mm-hmm.
and she has all this Beatles trivia
yeah,
that she's trying to share with AJ about Pete Best and mm-hmm. Best of the Beatles and how it was sad, you know,
yeah, right.
original drummer that got fired trying to capitalize on his association
yeah.
with the four famous guys. And that's all just great stuff. But yeah, more AJ basically being the biggest dick of all time.
Seriously.
Although, I mean, I think it's fairly realistic for like sort of a, you know, adolescent angry kid.
Separation of the parents.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I'm sure I said some things when I was that age that I'm not very proud of. Sure. But yes, he's being an asshole. And he wants to go. Basically, she's like, all right, you know what? You could just leave the table if you want. And he's like, fine, I will. So
yeah.
He leaves. Back to the executive game.
Mm-hmm.
And another cameo from David Lee Roth of Van Halen.
Of all people.
Yes, of all people. Like, how do they get this group together?
We have David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor. Frankie fucking Valli. Like, what? What show is this?
I mean, I think this is one of those things where, like, the show was so big at
yeah.
this point that, like, certain famous people or maybe certain people who were associated with New Jersey or whatever were
yeah.
just like, hey, can I be a part of the show? And people were like, yeah, sure. I mean, they sort of did similar things on Lost a little bit where you'd be like, who's that? Like, why is that random huge actor or a random kind of recognizable person in Lost?
Yeah.
And
I heard
you have to think.
I heard you listening to Lost.
Yeah.
Before we were recording.
Oh, well, this is a whole separate issue, but I've never watched Lost.
What?
Maybe that's our next podcast.
I watched up to season 3 and I was like, this is not a podcast I'm going to do a show about.
Oh, really? Yeah, you made that determination before podcasts were really
way
even invented.
Out. Way, way ahead of the game there. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
Well, I'm actually in season 3 of Lost right now.
Oh, okay. Well, enjoy the ending.
Oh, I've heard I'm going to have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Unlike The Sopranos, of course, no one has a problem right. with the ending of this show. But
yeah,
anyway,
right.
I guess there are a few parallels between the two series.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, so this executive game scene is great and
mm-hmm.
definitely raises the bar
mm-hmm.
between Feech and Tony in terms of the issues.
Yeah.
And we got Feech, you know, again, trying to make his sort of contribution
mm-hmm.
and everything.
A very good joke.
Yes.
I would say.
Right.
Guys are laughing at it.
Yeah.
They enjoyed it. David Lee Roth has a joke after that.
Yeah.
Not as good as Feech, but still laughter.
But what's really key here.
Yes.
Is that Tony's joke sucks.
So bad. It is so bad. I don't know if he is intentionally doing it and doesn't realize.
Right.
Or if he knows it's bad and
right.
he's testing it. Because prior to the jokes, he mentions that he took the GPS right out of his SUV. And Paulie gives a little like recognition to that. And
right.
Tony gives him a look. It gives Tony a moment of pause to be like, that seemed a little over, unnecessary.
Yeah, so sycophantic.
Right.
That,
exactly.
Like, even Tony is just like,
Right. So
yeah.
maybe he drops this really bad joke to test the waters.
Right.
Because it gets the biggest laughter. And we get this very nice slow motion pan of, you know, some of our best physical actors
yes.
in slow motion laughing.
Yeah.
And Tony has just a moment of, is Carmela right?
Exactly.
This, maybe she's a little right.
Well, absolutely. Because then when we get back to regular motion.
Mm-hmm.
And we focus on Tony as the laughter is continuing in the background. He looks so depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. Absolutely.
So score one for Carmella, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Although Carmella maybe doesn't realize that she's ahead because she does go upstairs and tell AJ, I've decided to let you go to New York. But instead of spending the night with your friends, you have to go straight to Meadows. But I'm letting you go. And
right.
all seems well.
Yeah. Gives him a little kiss goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carmilla's really trying. She really is sad that
yeah.
her son is so against her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's making her effort.
But then we get the nice wedding that we heard about, and this great moment of all these expensive cars being loaded onto that car truck, you know, the truck that carries cars.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called.
We know what it is.
Yeah. And we get all these rich ass people running out into the parking lot looking for their cars. And just that very, very funny moment when the one guy rushes up and says,
"Hey, so they got the SL.
That was a fucking SL55 convertible. You know how long my brother was on the waiting list for that thing?
A motherfucking year."
It's like Dave Chappelle doing white people. Yes. It's so good.
It's such
a motherfucking year.
The most perfect delivery ever.
It really is.
I definitely had to rewind it just so I could hear him say that a couple times.
Oh, God, it was so good.
Perfectly executed.
Yeah.
By that random guy.
Well, from there, AJ is in the city, but lets Meadow know, I'm probably not going to get up to you. It's right. Probably a better idea that I just stay here with my friends like I had originally planned, and you'll just have to cover for me. Meadow is in a position where she's not able to talk on the phone for very long and right. agrees to it.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't really give a shit anyway.
No.
Also, she'd rather be alone with Fenn, so
right.
It's a win-win for all involved.
Yeah. Cut to Carmela, though, trying to relax. Got the bubble bath going, mm-hmm. candles, but her baby boy is away in the city for the first time. It's not sitting right with her, so she has to do something about it.
Calls Meadow
up, and Meadow covers for AJ.
Right. A very plausible alibi, which is, he went to sleep because he came here from the concert a little drunk.
Shouldn't be telling you this, but right. Yeah.
So, hey, good job, Meadow.
Yeah, it worked. But AJ is with his friends getting royally fucked up. And yeah, it looks like the night is just about to get started for AJ.
Yeah, I love how this is just like a teen guys in a hotel greatest hits.
Yeah.
Porn on the TV.
Yeah.
Improvised bong device. Mm-hmm. It's party time.
Yeah, Sharpies have arrived.
Yes. So I like how this scene opens with Tony at the Bing. Having a nice like heart to heart with a topless stripper.
Yeah.
Who, if you actually listen to what she's saying, which it is hard to concentrate on the actual lines themselves.
Okay.
Because she's not wearing clothes, but anyway,
okay.
When you actually do listen to what she's saying,
yeah.
The lines are pretty good because they reveal something about her character, which is that she is a painter. And so she just bought some oils and like a new easel, and she'll be back into the painting.
Yeah,
and
great detail.
Yeah, Tony staring at her boobs takes a shot. He's like, "Oh, that's great. Yeah,
good for you."
But then in burst Dr. Freed.
Yeah,
in a panic. Direct from the wedding, right?
Still in his tuxedo.
Yeah, still in his tux. And like Tony's like, you brought the whole gang here to party. All right, right. Great. No, unfortunately, it's bad news, which is that someone has hit, as we know, the wedding.
Yeah.
Stolen a shit ton of the cars, the SL in particular.
Tony is truly surprised by it all.
Right.
And the doctor pleads with him. Gotta at least get the SL back.
Yeah. The SL, if nothing else.
Yeah. But next morning, Carmela is a little worried, already trying to call AJ because he's not home yet by 10:30, as she said. And we go to AJ's hotel room. His fucking face is stuck to the rug. He's missing eyebrows, and he has new ones drawn in for him.
How do you trash a hotel this hard?
Right? It seems like you have to intentionally trash it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, your fucking Joe Walsh would intentionally trash hotel rooms. Like, he was known for just destroying them.
Yeah, and I think that Johnny Depp was, too, when he was younger. But you know what's funny?
Huh.
I was like, hey, maybe they just, like, they had David Lee Roth, in this episode. They just asked him, like, back in the day, like, how'd you fuck up hotels?
Right. Yeah, so they just emulated that.
Yeah.
Carmela then has to call Tony in a true panic because one of the friends already got home.
Right.
So she doesn't know what happened to AJ. So we get all this commotion. You know, AJ gets himself together, finally does come home. Tony says he'll, you know, do something about it. When she hangs up on the phone, AJ does come home and he doesn't want any part of talking to her. She wants every part of knowing what it was going on. And for me personally, I can't stand this scene, this moment of her chasing him up the stairs, falling and hurting herself, and him not giving a shit.
Well, after he said, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
All of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I ever would have done anything this bad as watch my mom fall, bang her knee, and
just walk
just
off.
Be in pain, and then walk away.
Yeah, with an expressionless face because you don't have eyebrows.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty awful. AJ is definitely like a little shit to a degree that we haven't quite seen him be a little shit before.
Yeah. Then we get a small scene here of Christopher calling a car junkyard, seeing if that SL is in. Fat guy answering the phone says he'll look into it.
Right.
That's about it.
Yep.
That's what we get here.
That's the scene.
Yeah. But back to the home, Tony arrives in a bit of a fury.
Yeah.
Because cursing is a big deal in this house.
Well, yeah. I mean, so he's already mad, right? We get that shot of him marching out of his car, slamming the door behind him.
Right.
AJ's looking down from his room like, oh, shit. Okay, I better start kind of cleaning up my act for Dad because he's going to come down hard on me. But he doesn't know how hard Tony's really going to come down on him because Tony's old school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, he's old school in this sense.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, Tony has had some issues with his own mother.
Right.
But he really does not approve of AJ saying fuck you to Carmella.
You don't say fuck you, but if you need to smother your mother with a pillow, you take liberties.
That's the rule. I mean, we got to draw these distinctions.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess he doesn't even know what was said yet. He just knows that AJ cursed at Carmella.
Yeah.
And for Tony, that is a no-no. You do not curse your mother.
And how great is it that AJ's trying to be cool?
Right.
Coming down the stairs, he put clean clothes on, taking out the trash. The funniest part, though, Tony has no idea what's different about him.
Right.
It's so good. Carmella has to be like, his eyebrows are gone.
Well, that's the funny thing about eyebrows. When they're missing, you don't always notice right away.
Mm.
Like, for example, I remember fairly recently I was telling someone, oh, you know, Whoopi Goldberg doesn't have eyebrows.
Sure.
And they were like, wait, what? Whoopi Goldberg doesn't have eyebrows?
She doesn't.
What are you
talking
about? And then when you actually look it up, sure enough, no eyebrows.
Yeah, no eyebrows.
Yeah.
I prefer that over penciling them in, I'll be honest.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say I prefer no eyebrows just in general.
No. Because if you look at AJ, it looks like his face is bald.
Right?
Like, it's weird. It's a weird thing.
No, it is super weird. But then when AJ admits that he said the F word to Carmella, Tony slams him against the wall by his throat.
Yep.
So that's, you know, serious. AJ is in some hot water now.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the discussion kind of takes an interesting turn because AJ does sort of stick up for himself and say she wouldn't let me explain. And then as he kind of starts explaining there on the spot, Tony relents.
He does, but AJ's lying.
Right.
He's absolutely lying and Tony takes his side easily.
Yeah.
Because AJ says he was only drinking. It's not true.
Right.
Tony accuses him of sexual proclivity.
Right. That's funny. Yeah. Shaving off the eyebrows. He like likens that to some like just, you know, it's like in his mind, that's like just gay shit.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So Carmella, rightly so, is pissed at both of them.
Right.
And then we get the great exchange of,
he can go live with you.
Don't get dramatic now, all right?
What? Great, good.
Shut up.
But yeah, Carmella has had it. So she's just ready for AJ to be gone.
And smartly convinces Tony to take AJ.
Exactly. AJ is now at Tony's house.
Yep.
Right? With Artie.
With Artie.
And what are they watching? The Honeymooners.
The Honeymooners.
Yeah.
Exactly. We, early on, noted how Tony kind of resembles Ralph Crandon.
Right, exactly. So yeah. The makers of the show are aware of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we just have this great kind of guys' night moment. Perfect, you know, watching TV, the three guys. And
eating pizza.
You know, they got pizza. AJ's happy.
Damn, I'm craving pizza right now.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Hey, it's maybe what you should have for dinner.
Yeah.
Maybe The Sopranos influenced you here.
They always influence what I eat.
They influence my approach to the law.
Okay. Okay.
Moving on
to our meeting with Feech.
Yeah.
Right. Tony has to question him about this car heist. Now, maybe it's just me. But when Tony says,
"Are you aware of how many things a fucking MD can do for us?"
Sorry, Godfather. He was at the game. I thought he was just another pigeon.
Who authorized you to do it? And don't call me Godfather with that fucking cute smirk.
So here's some more ball breaking, right? But saying to the boss, "Sorry, Godfather," that's like goes beyond ball. That is so snarky,
yeah.
A feat, right?
Right.
But, and maybe it's just me, when Tony says, "Do you know how many things a fucking MD can do for us?" When he says that, he's given like the squinty, like, you know, Robert De Niro frowny face look. And perhaps it is justification for Feech, who recognizes that in some way.
Yeah.
To then call Tony Godfather.
It's funny. Of course, our listeners can't see this and never will. But as you were saying that just now, you actually did the De Niro face. It's a good De Niro face.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're quite good at that, at making the classic face that we all know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. yeah, but I don't know. I just feel like it's truly too snarky,
right,
of Feech.
Yeah.
Because like it's one thing to then say, "Well, I still think of you as a kid." But it's another thing to like just completely fucking forget that this is the boss of the family.
Right.
So I don't know. But he then makes an even bigger error to say that he completed the whole car transaction, not through Tony's guy, but through Johnny Sack's guy.
Yeah.
Even Scylla's like, "The fuck?"
Yes.
That's not a smart move.
Just ridiculously bad. That is strike 3, 4, 5, 6, 7
right
there.
Yeah. So, you know, Tony then has to mention, "I told you in the beginning when you got out, you can get back in the game as long as you don't step on anybody's toes." And what did he do? He's immediately been stepping on people's toes. And the show does this very well. Episode by episode, they put little breadcrumbs of like things, and then you start following the trail. And now we're at the end here where Feech has done too many things now. He's dropped too many breadcrumbs for us not to notice that he's fucking up.
Right.
Big time.
And Tony explodes very loud and really shuts Feech down. Kind of. Tony had been holding himself back out of respect, but he makes it very clear that's over. Like, you're not getting any special treatment anymore because of who you are or what happened between us in the past. I am the boss, and I will fuck you up if you keep pushing me. This prompts Feech to apologize.
Yes.
He kind of changes his tone. He becomes very humble.
Says he'll learn.
Right. Exactly. And then we get a great moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
We get a return to that wonderful slow motion pan across the guys.
Yep.
But there's a little bit of a difference this time.
Yep.
This time, as we pan across the laughing guys, laughing at that horrible non-joke by Tony,
right?
Tony recalls that Feech was there in the background all along, right?
It's an exact mirror of it, because Feech was doing this. We just didn't focus on it the first time.
Yeah, we literally weren't focused on it. He was out of focus the first time.
Buttering his bread.
Yes. And this time he's in focus. And we see that not only is he not smiling, he's got
the
disdainful
look.
Yes.
On his face. And that it goes right back to what Carmela said about having friends. Friends only laugh, and you think they're your friends, out of fear.
Right.
So when one of them is not laughing, and instead he's giving you like daggers,
right?
That's a bad sign.
That's a threat.
That's a threat.
Cut back to Tony, sad look on his face. He knows what has to happen now.
In that moment, he realizes it.
Yep. So he gets up, he makes nice, he hugs Feech, sends Feech on his way.
And then he says to Syl,
did I learn nothing from Mitchie April?
Huh?
Nip it in the bud.
Feech. He's well liked, T.
That's another thing.
And this is great because this is kind of something that I referenced earlier. So many parallels to season two, right? Because obviously, I mean, Tony's literally making this parallel between Feech and Richie, right?
Yep.
But they are similar, you know. Richie, of course, was a season two character and only in season two. Another great thing was that Richie had that great moment where he exploded during the executive game,
yeah,
right? And Tony had to come down on him. Richie just didn't really know his place. He came out of jail.
Right.
Wasn't really used to the idea of Tony being boss. Didn't really show him the proper respect again and again and again and again and again,
mm-hmm,
to the point where it actually wound up that like Richie was just openly, you know, plotting to kill Tony.
Yeah.
And so that's why Tony says what he says here. Did I learn nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got to nip this in the bud, which is actually the
what
line
he says. Yeah. And then, of course, the scene ends brilliantly with Syl telling Tony not to be so hard on himself as Tony starts to choke up and wipe away some tears and maybe a runny nose. And Syl just gives this look like, okay.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And also that, you know, reminder of Feech is well liked. Right.
Yes.
And then Tony says there's that too. So that's sort of a bit of a kind of tease of, okay, well, what exactly does he mean by, well, there's that too? Mm-hmm. Acknowledging what Syl has said.
Sure. And then things really are just already in motion. Christopher and Benny roll up on Feech's place. Now you're thinking, they're not going to just whack the guy right here on his porch.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Exactly.
But then you see like this this plot to take out Feech in motion. They have these plasma screen TVs in a truck and they need to store the truck somewhere. And they just set it up perfectly for it to be all Feech's idea to keep the truck in his garage.
Right.
Why not? All you have to do is just give me a plasma and I'll watch them for you.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, sure, Feech. Thanks, Feech.
Right.
That's great.
Great.
So, you know, on their merry way. It just seems like, oh, business as usual.
Happy little scene. Everyone got what they wanted.
Happy little scene.
Yeah. And so here we are. Wagler and Carmella discussing AJ at first.
Yes. Right.
And AJ, you know, so Carmella talks a lot about her concerns for AJ,
yeah,
which are all very, very reasonable concerns. I mean, she has very strong instincts. As she mentions in this episode, she does have very strong instincts about her son, you know, and what he can handle and what he can't. And she's able to predict the future, I think, pretty accurately,
yeah,
which is that if he doesn't go to school, if he doesn't have that structure, then he'll probably just drop out or he'll just, you know, work some like shitty job, which he'll give up on pretty quickly. And then he'll just wind up in like a really bad way with like a bad element and things will just go downhill from there.
Yeah. A Tony Soprano element.
Yeah.
To
exactly.
His life. Even though, you know, early on we know that Tony doesn't feel like AJ is cut out for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that AJ is not like cut out for a life of crime at all.
Right.
And could never, you know, really succeed at it probably.
Which probably makes it worse for him.
Right.
And a bigger fear for Carmella.
Right, yeah, because what he's doomed to be is maybe just like a loser, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe an addict,
sure.
You know?
He's already half a loser,
right.
So yeah, full-blown loser is a possibility.
But I guess the really important thing about this scene is that it, you know, really becomes apparent, like, what's actually going on here.
Yeah.
Which is that they're really just on a date.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He uses AJ.
Right.
As a device to meet up with Carmella.
Yeah, you got to do what you can, I guess.
I love that moment where he says escaping the quotidian. And Carmella is just, the expression on her face is like, you're quoting who now?
Yeah, right.
Like she doesn't understand quotidian and doesn't get it.
I don't think Tony ever said quotidian.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Not to her face. then he brings up Madame Bovary, which, little trivia for fans of us.
fans of us.
we read Madame Bovary in high school.
I didn't.
What?
I mean, I remember having it in my hand.
Okay.
And being told to read it.
Sure.
That was my ADD that my mom didn't
believe I had. Definitely did not read it well.
Yeah.
And did not understand the deep subtext that he paints here about this tragic woman who basically destroys himself. But why he brings this up to her in this moment about a tragic woman.
Mm-hmm.
Seems a little insulting. Goes right over Carmela's head, though, as she hastily writes down how she thinks all of those words are spelled. Right. Bovary and Gustave and Flaubert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
But the fact that she's so like readily into it.
Oh, yeah.
He shows.
A smart dude.
Yeah. And it really displays that the attraction is mutual.
Mm. Mm. So back at Feach's.
Yeah.
Parole officer at the door. Different parole officer than Feach is used to. It's a little unusual. But guy's looking through his house, sees the garage in the back, wants to look in the garage. You know where this is headed. This parole guy has obviously been requested by Tony's crew
right.
to go over to Feach's. And he's caught. He's caught with stolen plasma TVs. It's the best trap. A great way to take out Feach. You don't have to take him out by killing him. He's an old man. He's going to die in the can because now that's it.
Yeah. Instead of whacking him, they pulled a con.
Yeah.
And it worked very successfully. A little bit of trivia here.
Yes.
And we didn't ask him about this because it would have been way too early. But I remember reading that Frank Renzulli, who
friend
was,
of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show, exactly.
Yeah.
Frank Renzulli, the writer, was actually like, he had been long gone from the show at this point, but he was really critical of this plot point here.
Really?
Because he didn't feel that mob guys would have sold out one of their own in this way.
Interesting.
Even though it's not quite like a full-blown direct ratting, it's still like close enough to ratting that Frank felt it was just totally, totally wrong.
I mean, I respect Frank.
Yeah.
Because he's set up this world for us for most of it. And I will say there is probably a big debate amongst the Soprano community about what happens to Feach here. If it's fair for Tony to have done this. I think Tony was in the right because he could see it coming. He could see a power struggle here of Feach. He is well liked.
Mm-hmm.
He did not laugh at the jokes. He does not fear Tony.
Right.
And that is a problem.
Right.
Tony had to do something. So yes, I guess in the traditional Renzulli sense, he probably should have just been whacked. But even then, maybe Frank has disagreements on.
Yeah, who knows? It would be interesting to kind of get his further thoughts on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, Feach is screwed. He realized. And do you think that like in this moment, he realizes that he was conned? Because it's kind of ambiguous whether he knows what they did to him or if he's just like, wow, I can't believe my luck.
Yeah, it could be a combination. Yeah. It's played so well here.
Right.
By the actor that I'm blanking on his name.
Robert Loggia. And I don't know if we'll ever get that name right. But
yeah. It's played so well by Robert Loggia that, you know, you have to imagine that it should be left to a soprano ambiguity.
Yeah.
As we often get.
You know, a little bit of trivia about this, too.
A lot of trivia in this episode.
I know, we know so much. But I don't know if this is actually true, but it's definitely something that I saw once somewhere.
Okay.
Right?
Sure, this doesn't sound conspiratorial at all, but go ahead.
It's a fun story anyway.
Please.
That apparently Robert Loggia, so Feach wasn't supposed to get written out of the show at this point.
Right.
He's written out of the show in this episode, clearly.
Yeah.
But the reason why it happened is because Robert, I just won't say his last name in case I'm butchering it over and over again, just refused to like memorize his lines. Never knew his lines. So because of that, the bosses of the show, David Chase and the rest of his producers were like, we can't put up with this anymore.
Holy shit.
Like Tony, they said, let's nip it in the bud.
That is amazing.
I hope that's
true. I mean, you hear about that, right? You hear about like actors being such pains in the asses and then they're like killed off shows.
Right.
Because of it.
Right.
Or their character is, not the actor isn't just whacked. But that's hilarious. Yeah. That's really fun. Because, again, it goes back to, like, the precursor to Game of Thrones episodes. This was a big character.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth episode. Bye.
Right, yeah. And
to who you would, you know, I don't think Lorraine would have been bigger than whatever she was, but she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Feach.
Right, yeah. And maybe she couldn't remember her lines either. Who knows? She pissed him off in some other way.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's the end of Feach. Well, not quite the end of Feach.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
One last minute with Feach. But before that, Tony AJ, Tony B, and Artie all hanging out again. Seems like moving in with Dad was a good thing. Get to hang out with the guys. Your eyebrows are growing back.
Yeah.
You're learning about hot boxes and Dutch ovens.
Right.
It's good life.
Yeah, some real male bonding.
Yeah.
And he wants it to last the rest of the night. But, you know, Tony, he wants to impose some discipline.
Right.
And he tells AJ, hey, go up, do your Spanish homework. AJ pushes back, right?
Yeah.
But this look from Tony.
This stare down between them turns into a grin from AJ.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, Tony kind of reminds AJ, like, hey, like,
I'll choke you against the wall again if you just get upstairs.
Yeah, like, I'm Tony. Come on.
Right.
In addition to being your dad, I am who I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the fuck upstairs.
Learn Spanish, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, AJ has that smile, and he realizes he's not going to test his dad. He's got it pretty good. You know, why test? So he goes upstairs.
Why test?
Okay, so I like this next scene.
Yeah.
No dialogue at all.
No.
Feach on the bus back to the can.
Mm-hmm.
So here's where I'm thinking he does realize what happened.
Ah.
That he was like heliconned. Because he's not just staring at the window wistfully thinking, oh, I'm not free anymore and I'm going to jail because I violated parole and I'm going to be there forever. He's looking at parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He passed like two parking lots.
Right.
He's looking at all the cars. So I sort of interpret that as him being like, wow, I'm gonna die in jail over cars.
Yeah.
Because I chose to pull that heist and it was the wrong heist to pull.
But I mean, we know it's not just the heist.
Right.
He's been a bit of a prick since getting out of the can.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very sad way to see an old guy leave. I mean, if you just learned your lines, maybe you would be staring out of a prison bus.
I like that my rumor / conspiracy theory is officially what happened.
It's fact now.
It's a fact.
Yeah, that's the world we live in. And then we get Tony, right? Coming back into the Bing, sitting across from Syl, who says, hey, it's all in motion. Everything's good. He's gone. Good job. Chris agrees. We're all good.
Yeah.
Tony clearly not happy with the decision he had to make because the guy was a legend.
Right. Right. Yeah. Better than killing him. Sure. But I love that line from Tony. Hey, it's good that he agrees, he being Chris. I'm not running a popularity contest.
That's right.
But that's the funny thing about it, because that popularity contest was what he said to Carmella when she told him that he didn't have friends because they were all just followers kissing his ass.
Right.
And, well, it turns out that Tony used that to identify the threat that was Feach. So, yeah, he's not running a popularity contest, but in a way, you know, he is. And he's seeing who he's not getting the love from.
Right.
And that has consequences for that person who doesn't play the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our last scene of the episode is Carmela arriving at home. And then she gets this weird, like, flashback moment of a young AJ rolling down the driveway in a little toy bike.
Yeah, it's like big wheel.
Yeah, and she's now younger, screaming at him as he's spiraling out of control towards the cul-de-sac where there's not traffic at all. But this cuts back to Carmela, you know, a little shocked by that thought.
Right.
Enters a completely dark and empty house. She's the only one left.
Right. And I guess that brief, you know, flashback of just a few seconds is sort of an echo of the first shot of this episode when AJ, you know,
sure,
much more grown, driving a car up and down that same driveway.
Yeah.
And yeah, Carmela's little boy is gone. Yeah, he was an asshole to her, but, you know, that's still her son. And, you know, he's off in the world now. She won't really be able to protect him. And she kind of wishes that she could.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that most parents can empathize with that. So,
yeah,
it's a nice little kind of emotional beat to end the episode on.
A good job by Angie Bombacero.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah. I mean, she had a great. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, just for this episode, yeah.
Yeah, writing. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know the details, but I believe that she's had like a very long and kind of well-regarded writing career up until this point anyway.
Oh.
So yeah, she got to kind of show her skill here, which is great.
Awesome. Well, that does it for this episode of The Sopranos Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Join us next week. But until then, if you're enjoying the podcast and want to support it, please subscribe on all the podcast apps, including Apple Podcast. And like us on Facebook and Twitter. Reach out to us. Leave a comment. Talk about the show. Yep, that's it. And like we do with every episode, we end with our favorite lines from the show. I can start with my favorite line was the conversation between Elliot and Melfi. Just again with Elliot, always blunt as usual. When she says,
"But it is still no excuse to use the vile word that I used, of which I am sure you know that I'm talking about.
Cunt.
Yes, Elliot."
Just that.
Yeah.
Kupferberg saying cunt.
He's always perfectly blunt.
Yep.
And it's really well-timed, Peter Bogdanovich, when he drops those funny lines.
So good.
So my favorite line was an exchange, really, between Tony and Carmela at the opening of the episode. I don't know why this made me laugh so much. I just love Tony and Carmela fighting post-separation.
Yeah.
And this is when Tony's frustrated with Carmela. He's just over it. She's told him, you know, hey, like, there's all these problems with AJ and you're not helping. And then Tony goes,
"Why don't you just tell me when the school meeting is? Because I don't have to listen to this shit anymore. That's why we're separated."
What? Are you kidding me, Tony? That is not why.
It's true.